She called last night. She wasn't feeling well. Okay. One
here. Look at the right side where it says Yahoo. The Elisha Hanavi. Now remember, before Eliyahu died, he was told to do three things. To appoint a new king of Israel, that's Yehu, to appoint a new king from Aram, that's Hadad, and to appoint a new prophet to replace himself, Elisha. Now Elisha ends up doing the other two, because Eliyahu did not live to do the other two. Eliyahu did not appoint Yehu as a new king, and he did not appoint Ben-Hadad. That's what we learned last week. Okay? So now we're going to see how the actual appointment of Yehu takes place and what he is supposed to be doing. If you look at the picture, here, right? He becomes king just at the same time as Athaliah. And it takes him 5 years to kill her. And her 70 brothers.
70?
Athaliah ruled as the queen of Yehuda for 5 years. 6 years. She was fanatically idolatrous, exterminated all members of the house of David except one.
How did she come to be queen?
She was the daughter of
Remember, she was the daughter of the two lines. Really, they wanted to join together and have the. Remember, you see the chuppah there?
Yeah.
G and H. Mm-hmm. You see, he makes the lines with him. He marries his son off to his daughter.
So they had queen.
Okay. There was a queen born. They tried it once and it didn't work.
Yeah, I couldn't judge that. You have all these feminists here. This is very difficult.
Give it a shot.
They should point it
out.
Give
it a shot. Okay. All right, let's go. Elisha HaNavi Karola Achad Mizmei HaNaviim, the one below. He called to one of the prophets. Okay, this is while Yehoram was still sick. Remember, he asked for advice if he's going to see a Gird your loins means it's the Lashon. Just get ready, right? And take a pach shemen. Right? Now, why do we have to anoint him? No king of Yisrael has ever been anointed, except for the very first one, Yerovam. All these other kings appointed themselves, because most of them are not the son of the previous king. Right. You see that if you start with Rechavam here, Rechavam's father was Shlomo, Shlomo's father was David. Every king on the Yehuda side could be traced to the king above. Son, down to son, possibly a nephew, but always somehow related directly to David. But on the right side, the kingdom of Israel, is hardly too many descendants of previous kings. Okay. Alright, so we're already in our fourth dynasty. Okay, Yehu's going to be the fifth. Alright. Okay, so let's see. Yehu is going to, however, be the longest running dynasty of Israel, of the northern tribes of Israel. He had all five kings from his line. The longest of the northern tribes. In fact, four of the last six kings of Israel, I'm not saying Yehuda now, I'm saying Israel, four of the last six kings of Israel became king by assassinating the king before them. Obviously, that's not the son. The son doesn't have to assassinate his father, which his father dies and become king. But four of the last six kings became king by assassinating. That's why you see all those swords. Right? See on the right side? Mm-hmm. Pekah, Kachia, Shalom, Zakaria. But Yehu did get four kings after him, and
Yehu is a descendant.
Yehu is not a descendant. No,
he's Ephraim of Manasseh.
That is correct.
Which one?
Ephraim. Okay.
In Rashi, it says Ephraim, right?
Well, I heard many explanations of this expansion.
Okay, so yeah, you mentioned Yehu as all the kings of Israel from Ephraim. Yehu is also Ephraim. Not a badge of honor, actually, but But the kingship did come from Ephraim. That's why we have Mashiach and David, Mashiach and Yosef. Right? Because Ephraim is from Yosef. So the two kingdoms, two Mashiachs, two prophets. Okay, so let's see what happens here. Is we go to Ramoth Gilead and appoint Yehu as king and anoint him. The reason why we have to anoint him is because Yehoram is still alive. Okay? That's going to be a popular person. This is going to be a prophetic element of an oracle from God. Okay. Alright, let's read around. Emma, would you take us to first base? Uvasa Shama, go there and.
Uvasa Shama, Uvaye Sham Yehu Ben Yehoshaphat, Ben Nimsha, Uvaka Veha Hakemoto, Mitoch. אחד והבאת אותו חדר בחדר.
Okay, now he's called Yehu ben Yehoshaphat ben Nimshi. Elsewhere he's called just Yehu ben Nimshi. Now it's okay, we sometimes skip a generation when describing someone, but one thing is clear is that this is not the Yehoshaphat that you're looking at the middle of this page. Yehu was not the son of Yehoshaphat. That would make him the brother of Yehoram? That's impossible. Yehu was not the tribe of Yehud at all. Just coincidental, his father's name was Yehoshaphat. Okay. Alright, so take him. Beheveisa uso cheder bechoder. What do you think that means? Cheder bechoder.
It says
what purpose? Take him to a room within a room.
Yes, an interior room.
Do this secretly. You can't just crown someone king. People, word is going to get around when you crown someone king. Now, if he's crowned king and word gets around to the king, they'll try to kill him. Isn't that what Shaul tried to do, you know? Or at least Shmuel thought he would try to do when Shaul would find out that he crowned David king. Remember that? Shmuel was afraid that Shaul would kill him for it. Okay. So he tells him, the way they used to anoint kings was to pour oil over their heads. Okay, that's why the word Mashiach means oil. Mashiach is anoint. Okay? And poured on his head, I have anointed you as king to Israel. And then open the door and run. Don't wait there. Because Yehu will protect himself, but you, your life is in danger as soon as word gets out that you're distant. So no one won't find you. Open the door and scram. Don't stick around. Don't drink a L'chaim with him. Just get out. Okay.
Why should Elisha have to use someone else?
He's very old now. He's about to die. The horror, that's what it is. He's been slowing down a lot lately in the last few chapters, remember? Yeah. God can't do himself. And this is the Elisha these days. He go around all over and do miracles for everybody. So now he gives it to someone else to do. Okay? Now, what is happening in this text of repetition? Vayelach Hana'ar, Hana'ar Hanavi, the Mosquito. And the lad went, namely the disciple. Here they must say disciple. Look at the Targum. The Targum Ba'azal Alema. Alema means young man. Talmida Dinavia. So the first Na'ar means one thing. The second Na'ar means another thing. That's perfectly okay. Nezer has in his parish the Torah, a collection of psukim, where you have two words in the same pasuk, and it means two different things. A common one is Kel Na Refan Allah. One no means please, one no means now. God, please heal her now. It doesn't mean God, please heal her, please. And it doesn't mean God, now, heal her now. It's God, please heal her now. Okay? So to here, the first na'ar refers to his age, the second na'ar refers to like an apprenticeship. Okay? It's just a repetition that sounds very strange at first, right? But Yelach Hana'ar, Hana'ar, Navi Ramoth Gilead. Now she says the Okay, so this the Tanakh chooses not to reference this person's name. Okay. We don't know any students of Elisha, actually. Right? We go quite a long while after Elisha without any prophets. The next prophet is Yeshayahu. Or possibly Yonah, depending on the time period. So it would appear that Yonah might even have been before Elisha. Yonah was a prophet of Eliyahu. He's mentioned in Malcolm also. Right, anyway, but we don't have any known commodities right here. So it just mentions him as a man. Okay, Tobo, would you read verse 5, please? Anything?
And he came and behold the officers of the army, the city. And he said, I have a message for you. I have a message for your officer. And Jehu said, for which one of all of us? And he said, for you, officer.
Okay.
And he arose and came to the house and poured the oil on his head. And he said to him, so said the Lord, God of Israel, I have anointed you as king over the Lord's people, over Israel.
Okay, let's do it. So Jehu is, God likes to surprise his people. You know, David out of nowhere has come, going from a shepherd to being king. Shaul is looking for donkeys, and he becomes king, right? So here comes Jehu, who is invited in for a meeting, and he walks out, king, something like that. But you never know. Someone may walk up to you and say, okay, here, come pour some oil over your head, and go save the people.
I think I'll go hide in that room within a room.
Oh, you have to run, Richard.
The first thing you're liable to think of is you're crazy. How do I know they're telling you the truth here?
How did they accept it?
I have enough trouble trying to get someone to accept an award at the show dinner.
Yeah, but that's different. I can follow that.
I'm going to say, I'm a prophet, trust me. I'm supposed to be doing this.
Well, it depends if this prophet was known, if this disciple was known or not.
Right, or that prophecy is like an expected thing. Like if someone comes to you today and says, I want you to try it for the Knicks because I know that you're going to make the team if you really work at it. You know, right? You're going to be a Kiddush Hashem. You're going to not play on Shabbos. And this is what you're going to do, right? He says, yeah, but I'm overage. I'm out of college quite a while already. I'm out of shape. And he goes, just do it. You know, say, so if you're living in a time where there are a lot of prophets, and you say, you know, I'll give you a sign or something, or something's going to happen in the future. So people were expecting that then. There's a lot of that going on. But today, you know, prophet is someone says he's a prophet, therefore go invest in their company. You know, so get the money.
As long as it's not Enron. Nice. How much was the Hasidic Rebbe's head prophecy?
Well, I would say maybe Ruach HaKodesh, and there's a fine line between the two. The Gemara says, Mishachor Beis Mikdash, Nimser and Bulak Tam Shotim. The destruction of the temple, the Shekhinah is not so strong, so prophecy,
per se,
hardcore prophecy, goes to fools and to children. Ruach HaKodesh may be, you know, it's a bit arrogant.
Prophecy goes to fools and children.
It's a bit arrogant. I mean, sometimes you see, I mean, the people lining up, especially in the Sephardic world, lining up by the scores and scores of people every night.
By the Kvarim also.
Oh, yeah. It's funny thing. I mean, I was on the trip. I was there just the trip last month. You know, there was a couple and two of the kids who came on the trip with us from Israel. And, you know, I couldn't help but listen to them. The guy was in the process of suing his brother for the inheritance of their father. And he didn't shy away from talking out loud on the bus. You know, one point, I'm trying to learn here. Let's, you know, move that still. And it's private stuff, but they were going on and on and on. But the father left the millions and their brother took this, and they're fighting each other over the inheritance. So he wanted to see the Rebbe if he's doing the right thing by fighting over the inheritance. So I was there in the room. We all came in. I came in for a bracha for someone I know who has cancer. So that was my shot in the room. And while I was there, I said, "Give me a bracha for my tzibur." They said, okay, a bracha, the tzibur should be successful. Good. So if we're successful, we have him to thank. So then I heard a guy come after me.
Successful, we have you to thank.
So he comes in and he says, I want to do something in business. Is it going to succeed? And he goes, yes. Go do what you have in mind. It'll succeed. And on the bus, he was so, oh, this trip to Israel has been such a success. Now I know that this is going to work. And
this was very vague.
Of course. Or it's like this story. Okay, it's someone in Netanya. I'll tell you this, I'll just leave with this. There was once a famous Rebbe who was running for the train with one of his chassidim. And just before he gets to the door, the train doors close and goes off without him. Because that son should get an accident and fall off a bridge. Mm-hmm. And the chassid says, Rebbe, there's so many people on this train. There are hundreds and hundreds of people. What are you saying? He goes, all right, the train should not get into any accident. And the chassid is telling over the story. After this, and a miracle happened. The train did not fall off a bridge. It didn't get into an accident.
I can tell you such a story on the vision of it.
It was a miracle. He first was supposed to happen, then he took it away. It was a bigger miracle that it didn't happen. Okay. So to answer your question, at that time people heard this kind of thing and said, oh really? Oh my goodness, this is good. Okay. Plus, you know, they didn't have pictures of the people. You know, presumably when Shmuel went to David's house, probably people said, "This Shmuel Hanavi, did you know that? I don't have his card." Right? Today, we know what Rebbeim looked like, right? You have the pictures, you have the papers, and then they're in the Mahmudiyah, you can see what Rebbeim, Nassim C. Finkel looks like, and you know, you see.
That's a new thing. Years ago, they wouldn't have the pictures.
100%. It's a whole new thing. I have a picture in my office. I want you to see it before you go. Someone in Meir Sharon in the 50s is taking a picture of little kids. Ever see it? You see it? And the kids are like this.
Right.
On the floor, right. Holding their faces like this. And you see in the background a girl looking at them like this. Like, why are you hiding your face? They don't want to be photographed. Now all the Rebbeim, of course.
Why is that so?
Before they went to Israel, they had pictures of movie stars on the wall. And they came home only Rebbeim, all over the world.
That's Rebbeim. An improvement. Why is it allowed? Why did they so gallantly cooperate?
In Tshuva, Moshe said, "How is a girl allowed to have a Barbie doll or a teddy bear?" These are images, right? They used to worship these images of bears or eagles. Because everyone knows that this is an object not of worship but of adoration of some sort. Anyway, yeah. Okay. So he gives me his mission.
Yep.
Right? And he says, the Torah just read that you're going to be the king. And this is your mission, which is Pasuk Zayin. Jenny, would you design,
please? אחר אדוניך, ונקמתי דברי עבודי הנביאים ודמי כל עבדי השם מיד איזובר.
Okay, one more.
Who was Isabel?
Isabel was Ahab's wife.
Oh,
Jezebel. It looks strange because it said in Esnachta. Otherwise it's Isabel. Isabel, not a very pleasant name, but she murdered anyone who once stood in her husband's way, and remember there was a vineyard story, and she murdered anyone who tried to prevent her from incorporating her idols into Israel. So that's Isabel. Okay, so I'm going to get revenge upon all the blood of the prophets that they spilled. Right?
Mashtim, Nikia, Le'otzur, Le'otzuv, and Yisrael.
Wow. So this is an actual vulgarism of the Bible that appears in about three or four different places. And the English translation just reads males. Mashtim Bekir. Right? Mashtim Bekir. Now, Mashtim is actually a very common terminology in the Talmud. Okay? Bekir is a wall. Now I actually have a book in my office that gives alternate meanings of difficult terminologies. Kir, he claims, is from the word kirya, kiryat arba. Kiryat arba. Mashtin here, he claims, is someone that that resides. It means all residents of the city. It's distant from pshat. The pshat is because it's used about four or five times in the Bible, and I'm tempted to just say it's what was someone saying. It's like a every greased pig is gonna, you know, something like that. You know, it's called a I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce it. Synecdoche, is that right?
Synecdoche.
Synecdoche?
Right.
Okay. S-Y-N, I know how to spell it. Mm. And it ends with D-O-C-H-E.
Right.
M-E.
Synecdoche.
Synecdoche. So there's got to be a C in there.
Right? So what is a synecdoche? Is where you say one thing and it's meant to include everything, or you say everything and it's meant to include, like I'm the law here. That's a synecdoche.
Mm.
I'm just one person. I'm the law. Yeah, I'm the law. I represent the police and the judge, and that's what he used to say down south. Right? Or there's a synecdoche coming up in the Torah where Moshe tells Paro, not even one hoof is going to remain in Egypt. Right? So he says, I'm going to kill every single, now Mashtin Bakir. In the Talmud, it means one who urinates against the wall. Mashtin.
Mm.
Right? So that's why it says men. In fact, Rashi in Shmuel Beis, in Shmuel Aleph, where this appears, says it means every dog, because a dog tends to do that too. Right? Or maybe the fire hydrant won't be coming up. But, yeah. See, the doctor says, Peirashnu Osam Lamala. He explained these words above. He's supposed to be above even though where. The last time these words appear, there's one in Lachem Aleph, and there's one in Shmuel Beis. And in Shmuel Aleph. And
it references here like Melachim Aleph three places.
Yeah, okay.
In the notes.
Right, well, then I think.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, good. So that's what the Rebbe is saying. There's also places in Shmuel. You know, in each case, I can say, okay, it's a vulgarism. Someone is trying to say, you know, in a hyperbole of everything that's going to be wiped out. But David uses it when he talks to Abigail. That's not a way for a man to talk in front of a woman. But David was, a little bit of a ruffian at the time.
A regular guy.
This is when he was running away from Shaul and he was abandoning with the 600 men and fighting with the Syrian rushing here, and then, you know, he lived a ruffian lifestyle at that time. So he spoke in a rough way.
I think
that's why he couldn't build it in English, because it was rough.
Portrayal of Henry V when he's a boy, he's hanging out with all the lowlifes.
Pochazim, yeah.
And then when he becomes king, he just won't have anything to do with him, and he finally comes out.
Yeah. When you have to,
okay,
so this is what he says. So destroy from him all the entire house, all the males thereof. Absorb Azul. It means every restrained and free one in Israel. Meaning that this ceased to be because of Achav's idolatrous and tyrannical policies. If you look at the box beginning at 3021, he ruled for 22 years. And he did a lot of things, a lot of terrible things, right? They have, of course, the picture of the man with the woman's hand, right? They have a bunch of those around here. He's dominated by his
right
wife. Broke the tablets, broke the law. Right? He was led with a whip against those who would want to blow the shofar, meaning the true prophets. There's a drought and a famine. It's crossing out the wheat. You see that? That Edom mountain, that's where Eliyahu took all the prophets up to Har Carmel, and remember? And he defeated Ben-Hadad. He was successful at battle. He murdered Naboth, the guy who owned that vineyard. H would be forged a peace pact with the king of Yehuda by having his son marry the daughter of Jehoshaphat. Right? And he fought together with Jehoshaphat against. Remember, he asked the prophets to come and tell them what would happen, and he asked Micha to say what would happen, and he said, I don't want Micha. He always gives me bad prophecies, because Achav used to pay people to give good prophecies, so it would be stupid, just give a good prophecy and get money. Micha was asked, remember, he was asked by the spirits to give him a lying spirit to lull him into a sense of security, and he would fight the battle, but he was killed in the battle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's happening. All right, so let's go to the present text. Let's continue, please, and study.
The Nakasi et Beit Achav Kuvait Yeravam Ben Nevat U Kuvait Asha
Ben
Achia.
Look at the map. Yeravam. Yeravam's kingdom was killed off right away, the next generation. Right? Yeravam? Two. Then Basha also has two. Then Zimri, he just ruled along for 7 days. Basha two, Zimri alone, didn't even give his kingdom over to anybody. Omri was Ahav's father. Ahav was Achaz and Yehoram's father, so that's only three generations. And then Yehi. So the longest running kingdom so far is only three generations. Terrible.
How do you measure generation?
Well, I mean, Omri was only king for a very short time. Well, that's just 10 years. But Omri's son, Ahav, it's 1, 2. And then Ahav's two sons, Achaz and Yehoram, were both his sons. So that's three. Okay. All right. So now Yehu has a mission to assume the kingship and to kill off all the remaining children of Ahav. Okay. Now, before he does that, he's going to dispatch Abishag.
Good.
The one I really don't like. We like her even less than Atalia. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And she's still alive all this time.
She's in the background, planning, plotting.
Okay.
Pretty old at this
point. Okay, yes, please.
Yes, he's Yochlu Haklavim, the Tachelat Yazrael, the Ain, Tover, Vayikach, Hadelat, Vayanosh.
Okay, and he finished off his prediction. Izebel shall not be given to burial, she will be devoured by the dogs. It happened that way, by the way. I'm going to ruin it for you now, but at the end of this chapter, you didn't see that they were finally able to get up to her and sort of push her out the window, and she fell out from the top floor of the palace onto the floor. And so the form of the killer, and then the dogs came in and only left palms. They just didn't eat her hands. So the Gemara says that at weddings she used to play castanets for the chasnei kala. So she used to make chasnei kala, so her hands got to be buried.
That was the only good part.
There's one good part. I think the Medrash wants to say something interesting. He says there's potential in everybody. Now, while we say that, there is, however, the Gemara is willing to admit that there is pure evil. We should not look for the good in a Amalek. The Gemara said that there is shouldn't look for the humanity in them. Okay? Any hint of humanity in them. Like after they would kill 20,000 people and then go home and listen to their music and play with their children, that hint of humanity should be seen as more of a disgusting aspect of their inhumanity. That they could wash away that they just did at work and then go home and listen to the symphony and calm and pick up their children and throw them in the air.
It's like the Nazi comment and Sophie's Choice.
So what I'm trying to say is that I think there's a fine line here that's drawn, and I want to point it out. There are midrashim about some good points about Paro, about Esau, but there are some people, don't look for the good points in everyone. Haman, no. Amalek, no. There's some pure evil. Because otherwise, we run the risk. You know, I just read an article, in the City Sun. You know that right before killing the Pope, or trying to kill the Pope, this Muslim actually killed a Turkish journalist,
yes,
right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right, and he escaped jail for that.
He escaped.
And then tried to kill the Pope.
Right.
So when he was convicted for killing the Pope, he had already been convicted for murder and convicted for a lifetime sentence. In fact, he was convicted to the death penalty, but then Turkey changed its law and outlawed the death penalty.
Yeah.
So a year or so after he tried to kill the Pope publicly forgave him and went to the jail cell. And now they're starting to write about the orphans of this... this journalist that was murdered by him left young kids. Now they're older because he killed them in 1979. So the journalist kid said, "The Pope never came to my house to pat me on the shoulder and say, and say, you know, hope you got an easy way to deal with what happened from this man. Now he's free.
He's free.
And the girl says, "I've been living a miserable existence ever, and I miss my father." So the reason I'm saying this is because everyone is trying to find, there's a good in this man. I forgive him. Now try to change your life around. It doesn't always work for some other people who are very harmed by this person. Mm-hmm. So the fine line I'm trying to draw here is that you see in the Midrashim trying to find something good. This Midrash about her hands remaining because she played at weddings means that Izebel was not the pure evil of which we speak here. She was just 98% evil. But there are some pure, there's some pure evil that we should not attempt to find the humanity in. Okay? That is what I suggest, what the Chazal said by reporting that her palms remain. That's a fact. That's written in the Bible. Now, you want to say a pshat? Because dogs like to eat every part of human being except the fingers. I don't know. Why did the dogs not eat the fingers? Because they didn't taste good. Right? So
many bones.
But when the Midrashim try to find the meaning of everything in the Bible, right? So when it says this, somebody seek for the deeper meaning of this.
They didn't like her brand of nail polish.
Could be lots of different reasons, right? Okay. There's parenthetical. There's another story like this with Zom Zong. Very rarely got involved in communal aspects of Zoma's the life in film. I don't know if you've ever heard of this story about his name was Abram ben Abraham. He was a ger. He's known as the ger. He converted from Christianity, and he became a disciple of the Gaon of Vilna. And the Christians found him and burnt him at the stake. And only one finger remained that they were able to give back to bury it. And Gaon made a great effort to get this finger buried. And there's a place in Vilna that says this is where the ger. I have a story here written in German. That starts on one of these when you read German. I'm telling you this is that he was, now the Christians found out who he was, is that one time he berated a man in shul for allowing his child to run up and down the aisles. This is in the 1780s. And the guy said to him, "Well, you're just a convert. Who are you coming to tell us to get?" And there was a Christian passing by the window, and he said, because they're looking for the convert. No one was converting to Judaism at the time. And they found him in the shul, and they caught him in the shul. And when they were about to burn him, they said, "Just renounce Judaism, and we'll make you a very honorable man. We'll give you a house. Just renounce your Judaism." And he said, "The pleasure I get from," this is how he said it, "from just lighting the Shabbos candles is worth all of the, more than all the pleasure that you Christians claim to get from a lifetime of belief in Jesus and all the afterlife. Just the one day of mentioned Friday night candles. Never mind all the other mitzvahs I've done." Mm-hmm. And he went to
death. Did anything happen to the man who basically betrayed him without
realizing it? Yeah, I think this just goes down in history. He's not named in the book. It just goes down in history.
Betrayal.
So we should tell the story when talking about speaking Christ's soul.
Okay. Getting back to the text, the question, the prophecy that this lad is given was
now he rushes out.
And he rushes out. Elisha didn't relate this whole prophecy to him.
In the text. I'm sure he would.
It wasn't his own prophecy then.
No, not at all. But you're right that this often happens in the Bible. We have to compare what was said to what was instructed, and they appear to be two different things. Okay? Alright, so he runs out. V'yehu yatzon el adei Adonai v'yomer lo ha-shalom madua boha m'shuga hazeh ilecha. Okay, now Yehu's master is Ahav. We learned that already. Yehu was an officer of Ahav. Okay? I don't know. It doesn't. I don't think he calls him that. But Yehu was an officer of Ahav, and they said, "Is everything okay? Shalom. Why did this Meshuggah come?" Remember, Eliyahu Hanavi datin es ha'ish ve'sichal. Said, "You know the man in this speech." Now, apparently, this prophet who came to him was known. that when he walked out, he ran out actually, people said, "Who's that nut who came to talk to you?" He said, "Ah, he just rambles on. Who knows what he is?"
Here,
yeah.
It was Jonah.
Oh, he's a disciple. Yeah, this is interesting. The point is that there is a fine line between prophecy, even in the time of the Bible, and
madness,
mishugas. The word mishuga.
Right,
that's where it comes from. There's a fine line between madness and prophecy.
Well, the perception of it.
Yeah, you go around counting the cycle, this is the end of the world, you know, the world is coming to an end. I remember what Lorenzo was in the taxi, it was about 5 degrees outside, this guy was in a tank top carrying the placard, this is the world's coming to an end. And I remember one of my little kids, I forget which one, like 3 or 4 years old, he said, "That man is crazy, right?" Now, crazy means when it's 5 degrees outside and you willingly walk out like that, you know, and then she said, isn't he cold? Mm-hmm. Right? In other words, it seemed to her the way things, just the perception of it, that he is choosing to do that. He's not just walking out like that because he's cold, and we should go buy gloves and a coat and give it to him. No, he wants to walk that. He wants to draw attention to himself, and therefore to do that is crazy. Now, I got to tell you, that would mark as crazy a lot of our prophets, especially Yechezkel. I mean, you know, why God puts them to that? I mean, Yechezkel does some very strange things. which is why Radaki, the Nezer, and the Rambam say that they're all figurative. He never actually did any of those things. He didn't eat the Megillah, he didn't lie on his side for a year and a half, he didn't stand in the Valley of Bones. These are all he didn't shave his face to be totally eyebrows, eyelashes, and everything. He didn't do those things that it says just figurative for some purpose. He didn't even party when his wife died, as I shouldn't tell him to do a chapter 24 and other things like that. The whole book is filled with stories, and each one, the challenge is, is to find a figurative message behind what's happening. And they're very good at doing it. Okay, so you know this guy. He's a Meshuggah prophet. He's always speaking prophecy. Okay. Actually, you know, there's a story about a man who used to walk around naked in all sorts of weather in a city in Europe and claiming he's Mashiach. And he's married. And his wife found out. She wanted to get from him. And the rabbis sat him down. They said, "That's nuts. So how can if a man has to give sound mind to give a get, so it's theoretically in trouble." So Rav Moshe Feinstein, who was just his emergence into the thing, he was just a kid at the time, about 20, 19. So he came up with a kiddush. He said that he's doing two things, but clearly not quite outrageous. He's saying he's Moshiach, he's obviously not. And the Gemara itself says one of the signs of insanity is a grown person to learn how to walk down the cloak.
So they don't feel the cold, I think.
It's possible.
They're not aware.
Possible. But in this case, Rav Moshe said, is it definitely a sign of insanity to say a Mashiach? It can't be. And when Mashiach really comes, are we just going to just brand him as insane? Hopefully Mashiach will present himself sometime soon and we'll accept it. Right? So, okay, let's isolate the two claims. Then, this may be his personal reading of the Ramban at the end of Vayikra. Where Ramban says that Moshiach's time will be an attempt to bring us back to Gan Eden. Stuff eating meat, we'll be at peace, we'll change the animal world, it'll be a very different world. And the Gemara Ksuba seems to be saying this also. That being said, and he says, well, since in the Gan Eden story that they want more clothing, so he just thinks that this is a function of my being Moshiach. Since saying that Moshiach can't be a definite sign of insanity, then whatever he's doing is connected to being Moshiach, also should be signed in Sandy, and they sat him down and they convinced him to give his wife a get, and she was freed. Now, it's very clear that you can see certain behavior, even by someone who claims to be a prophet, that is, you know, it's quite outrageous. I've met some people like this. Usually they're extremely paranoid and they think the world revolves around them. And part of paranoia is that there's a lot of interest in you. See that person walking down there? That person doesn't care about you. Oh yeah, he does, and so does everyone else around here. They're all out. They're all some kind of sinister plot to get me. Mm-hmm. Who? By whom? The government. I met such people. The government doesn't really care about you. Yes, they're trying to get me. So it's sort of that you're in the center. That's what prophecy is. I am the center of predicting what's going to happen to this city and this country and this world. right? Sort of an egotistical point to it, right?
It's a desire for self-esteem.
Which is why on the Rambam's Kinyanim for prophecy is modesty, is humility. The true prophecy. You can't think that you're the center of it all. You have to think that it's Moshe, on what we call it, the greatest prophet, is the most prophet. Okay, you see it? Perfect. Okay, Bayamu Sheker Haged Nalavu. You're lying. Tell us what he really told you. Remember, Kadosa Kadosa Mari Light, and more. Komar Hashem Shaktichol and Melach El Yisrael. Yehu, what are you doing? This is exactly what Elisha was afraid of. That word should get around that this program. Word will get around that you're king. You become king. Fine, word will get around. We have to get around sooner or later. But why are you threatening this man's life? I mean, Elisha himself thought that this was not safe for him to run about, right?
And they hastened, and each one took his garments, and they put them under him on the top step. And the sound of the shofar and said, Yehu has become king. And Yehu, son of Jehoshaphat, son of Nimshi, revolted against Joram, while Joram was guarding in Ramon Ramoth Gilad, he and all Israel again Hazael, king of Aram. And King Jehoram returned to recuperate in Jezreel from the wounds that the Arameans inflicted upon him when he fought with Hazael, king of Aram. And Yehu said, if you so desire, let no survivor leave the city to go and tell in Jezreel.
Okay, Yisrael, it's not a word of Yisrael, but it was actually a place in Israel called Yisrael, the valley. And it's going to actually, it's a place where Ahav killed Naboth for his vineyard. It becomes an ironic place for the sons of Ahav to be murdered, right? He killed. So it has become now a well-known and advertised and broadcast issue that Yehu attempts to take over the throne. Look at the chart from Yehoram. Yehoram has been ruling already for quite a time, right? I mean, this king is 13 years already.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so let's read a little further. So, plus a Yehu is riding towards Israel because that's where Yehoram was wounded, right? Okay. Yehoram was wounded. You know, he fell out of the window.
Yehoram says,
Yehoram was wounded that bad. And Ahaziah, the king of Yehuda, came out to meet him. What is the relationship between Ahaziah and Yehoram? Don't get mixed up because there are a lot of similar names here, right? Ahaziah, king of Yehuda, and Yehoram, king of Yisrael. Because remember, Yehoshaphat's
brothers, right?
Yehoshaphat's son, Yehoram. His mother was Athaliah.
It says his wife was Athaliah, Yehoram.
Let me say, Yehoram's wife, Ahaziah's mother was Athaliah. Right? Ahaziah's mother was Ahab's son. Right? Ahaziah's mother was Ahab's daughter. Good? Ahaziah's mother was Ahab's daughter, okay? Mm-hmm. Natalia. Now, Ahav's son is Yehoram. So Ahaziah's mother was Ahav's daughter. Yehoram is Ahav's son. What would that make Yehoram to Ahaziah?
Uncle.
Here it says that Ahaziah's mother was Isabel.
Yehoram's mother. Yehoram's wife was Athaliah, that makes his mother-in-law.
Oh, the Ahaziah from Yehuda is, his mother was Athaliah.
So let's get it straight. Ahaziah and Ahaziah's uncle is Yehoram.
Right.
Okay?
Which
Ahaziah
is Ahaziah
here.
We're looking at
this Ahaziah
Yehuda.
Is it this Yehoram, he was sick and wounded in battle.
Okay.
So he is his uncle, right? Because his father, Ahav, mm-hmm. right, is Ahaz's grandfather from his mother's side, right?
Aye.
Now you see why Yehoram is so difficult. And Yehoram, it's my sister-in-law's brother's sister's son's cousin, aunt's uncle from the second marriage.
All right.
And
I was studying wills in law school, that's when I quit.
And I gave my grandson a test and said, can you explain this? It doesn't make any sense. So he said, come up, I'll go back to yeshiva and I'll come back tomorrow and explain it. And he did.
Mm-hmm. Good. Good. Okay, so
really confused.
So Haji goes to visit his uncle. Where should we
do Yud Zion? Yud Zion?
Where
is Yud Zion?
304 on the
bottom.
Yeah.
304. Okay. The Hatzofet Omeid Al Amidol B'Yisrael Bayar Et Shifat Yehu Bivo Vayomer Shifat Ani Ro'ev Vayomer Yehoram Kach Rakav Ushlach Ligra Atam Vayomer Hashalom.
Okay, the next few psukim are quite a bit redundant. Okay, I'm just going to tell you on the outside what is Yuches Yuches and Kav. What happens is Yehu ben Nimshi, Yehu ben Yehoshaphat ben Nimshi, drove like a Meshuggah, like a Meshuggah himself. He drove like he would drive 120 miles an hour on the highway. He was driving very fast in his horse. So fast that when people see him from far, far away, people are able to tell it's him by how fast he's going. Okay? That. So he's coming along toward the palace, right? And Yehoram sends out messengers to find out, why is he coming so fast? Is he coming in peace? Is he coming in battle? What's the point of Yehu coming to the other? So he sends one driver on a horse to come out to greet him. He goes, Yehu, is there peace here? Are you coming with a message of good tidings or something? He goes, what do you have to do with peace? What do you know from peace? Come back with me to the palace. Fall in behind me. So the king looks from far, and his lookout is saying, he's driving along with him now. He says, okay, send another one to find out what his mission is. Is he coming in peace? And the second guy also comes in. Are you coming in peace, Yehu? And he goes, what do you know from peace? Fall in behind me. And now these people keep now accompanying Yehu back to the city, back to where the king is. Okay? And they say, we know it's Yehu, why? Ki b'shigaon yinhag.
Right.
How many times do we use the word Meshuggah in Tanakh that we have to have two in one chapter? See the top line, the top word on page 306. The Shigaon Minhag. He drives like a maniac.
Yeah, that's what we say.
They were visionaries. They knew it was coming.
That's what my wife always says to me. Don't drive like a crazy person.
Okay. So Yehoram says, prepare my animal, hitch up. He was to say it. Esor. Like Paro, but yeah, Soros Rikbo Vesamola Kafino. Okay? Do you read your person?
Yeah, Paro? No, I don't come back here. Hold on. Vayomer Yehoram, Esor, Vesor, Rikbo, Vietse, Yehoram, Mount Israel, Ahaziahu, Mount Hilda, Ishberichbo, Vietu, Vikras, Yehu, Vitsahu, Vikalkas, Nabos, Israel.
Right away, you can see from this process that Yehoram expects some kind of treachery because I sent people to find out if you come in peace and you're, you know, expect some kind of better response than what you do. Just dragging them along and taking them with you and driving out on the Shogunah back into the town. It just seems that your intentions are not good for me. Okay? Right? And where did they finally meet?
Yeah.
What a coincidence. I mean, the Bible is so good at this.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, where did David's final recompense take place in the rebellion of Absalom before he gets better? is where Avshalom takes the 10 women up to just the very roof where David saw Bathsheba in the first place. In the desert there. So, so the Bible is filled with these kind of ironies. Right? Okay, so they finally meet up. These two, Jehoram, who is sick, and Ahaziah, who is visiting him. Jehoram from the kingdom of Israel, Ahaziah from the kingdom of Yehuda, come to visit him. Okay. And they ask him, Vayikir ot Jehoram es Yehu vayomer ha-shalom Yehu. When Jehoram sees Yehu, he says, you come in peace? Finally, he's asking him himself. So vayomer ma-shalom ha-bnunei zeder limcha shoftei ha-rabim. What peace can there be in the country that has allowed your mother's znus and harlotries and all of her sorcery and everything else, all the witchcraft and magic? It's not a way to talk to a king, is it? Don't forget, Yehu was already king himself. All right?
Does Yehoram know that
he's
king?
Possibly not, because it just happened. But maybe the rumor has been going around because he did announce it.
Yeah.
Yehoram is scared. Mm-hmm. Says, "Yafok Yehoram Yedavah Yenos." He turns around and Vamus Yemre L'Chazyahu Mirma Chazyah. And he said to Chazyah, "There is treachery here. Nichla. Is that word? Does the shorish sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
When the brothers saw Yosef, it says, "Vayisnaklu." So Nichla means treachery. The brothers behave treachery towards Yosef. V'yehu mileyu do bakeshes v'yachas Yehoram ben Zohar v'yeti achetim v'yibol v'yikram v'yichbo. Whoa. Yehu must have been a very good shot.
Mm-hmm.
He shot him so hard it went through his heart out his back. Okay. Some
readers read. But if he was fleeing, you would think he would have been shot in the back. Right?
Yeah, it doesn't say where he came in, which way.
Mm-hmm.
So he came in from the back, went through his heart, and pierced his heart to the other side.
Right.
So, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And he went over. There's a lot of science about you know, when someone gets hit.
Which way
they fall forward, they fall in the same direction that they were being hit.
The whole thing with Kennedy's is right.
Mm-hmm. The way he jerked seems to have been showing someone shooting from a different direction than
right.
And
not from behind rather than forward.
But the book was written in Shmuel Aleph about the way Goliath fought. That the David obviously living from the front, right? It proves just exactly the science that F. Kennedy was shot by Oswald from the other direction.
Mm.
Because at first they jerk one way and then they fall the other way. Because David hit him from the front and he should have fallen back. Which would be another reason for that, is because if you're hit with a blow that just wounds you, then your first reaction is to try to get the footing, and then your brain gets it. Sorry, no footing here. You have no use of your body, and then you just collapse. But if it kills Kennedy, must, I think, was immediately didn't have any sense.
Well, he was immediately unconscious. Right. He wasn't dead.
Right. So there was no attempt though to try to get the footing, and then you put one with the other. But with Goliath, it might have been actually an attempt on his part to gain some footing. But then there's no attempt, and you're just going to fall in the direction the thing pushes you back. Okay. I heard another piece of science about David killing Goliath, since we always get off on so many tangents, is that when you get bigger and bigger, it's called giantism. Your body just keeps growing and growing and growing. Unless it takes some medication, the pituitary gland keeps getting bigger and bigger until they just can't handle it anymore. And the one part on the body that's like the Achilles heel is right here. This the skull can't take it anymore. Goliath, it says, was 6 amos tall. Just, you know, can't go through 9 feet.
Right.
6 amos and a pinky, it says. 6 amos and a zeros.
So
it's precise. It
made Will Chamberlain look like a...
Right. Now, it could be that an amma then was a little shorter, but still, at anyone's estimation, 7.5-8 feet. So
he would be great.
So he's But it's the same kind of disease. I mean, you just get so far with your own genes. But what happens is that this starts to open up, and this is such a sore spot that it, I don't know if David knows this science, but to hit him right there is exactly the right place to hit him. Because this is so soft that it'll, you know, and it's... Anyway, So here it says, but Yichra, he hit him from the back, but that instantly killed him. The way it describes is what he did. So he had no chance to gain any footing after being hit, and he just pushed him in the direction of his foot, and he fell. Yichra, very slow. Yichra means he bent his knees. That's the Hanachim Korin. He bent his knees forward and fell forward. Remember El Bidkar Shalisho. So Hashlichehu Bechelkas. Today, Navot Israel. Pick him up, throw his dead body. As a king, you know, a king usually gets a little burning or something like that, or a little activities. Throw him out in the field of Navot. He's a Choran, Yiva Atza, Isra, Chim, Tzmadim, Achari, Achav, Aviv, Hashem, Atza, Aviv, Hashem, Atza, Aviv, Hashem, Atza, Aviv. You know, we used to ride together for his father. There you see, he was an officer of Achav. Okay. And now Yehu is behaving very biblical by saying this next pasuk: "In lo estimei novos estimei v'novo isi emesh nu Hashem v'shilanti l'chad achelka hazos nu Hashem v'atoh tzarish v'chil v'chelka k'dav Hashem." Okay, very prophetic. Because what is the one overarching message of prophecy in the Bible? Try to give me one sentence that every prophecy in the Bible boils down to this one sentence. Okay, what is it that he says? Of course, that's the underlying point, but what is the message?
This is what's going to happen.
Because?
You have to believe God and trust in God.
So, now, not everyone spills blood, but some people do. That's why we reap what we sow.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You see it? Every prophet, one for good or bad. You do this 7 years, you do this 2 years, you do this. The prophets are always telling us, this is what you get for doing that. There's a cheshbon to what we do. All right? We reap what we sow. Now, that's good in prophetic times. You heard me say many, many times, let's not play God and try to explain who reaps what and who sows what. Right? You can't play prophets today over who's getting what and who's not getting what. But in the time of the Bible, prophets looked at people and said, this is going to happen to you because you did X, Y, and Z, and you know, you could still avoid it by doing A, B, and C. Right? So he's telling him that specifically, isn't it ironic that we're dumping the king's body right in the field where his father killed the Naboth and took his vineyard?
Mm-hmm.
Now this is a vicarious punishment, right? Achav the dead, but we wouldn't kill the son for his father's evil, but that's the way things work in the Bible, especially when you're a king. I think we'll stop here with this pasuk. And my friends, next Monday at this hour, I will be, please God, in the Holy Land. This very hour, I should be like in Shira, in the Shiva, in the Old City. And one way or another, what we'll be doing here. So 2 weeks from this time, 2 weeks from now, we'll come back to finish, and I'll come from you, so please do.
Papa.
February.